Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, February the 18th. Happy President's Day. We celebrate President's Day today here in the United States. I have a few thoughts about that because every time we celebrate President's Day, I have a sort of, I spend some time thinking about who are my favorite presidents and so on. So I always write a note about President's Day in my blog, and I'll share with you the one that I have coming up tomorrow. But of course, the big story today is this conversation or talk about the 25th Amendment. It all started roughly about a week ago when CBS began promoting a segment they were going to do on 60 Minutes with former Deputy Director, former FBI, Deputy FBI Director, Mr. McDade. And in that promotion, they were talking about the 25th Amendment. And last night, we sort of got to hear what it was all about. It was not as bad as it had been originally presented, or at least I don't think so. But what is the what is the 25th Amendment doing in any conversation anyway among bureaucrats? This is not, I don't care what level you are in the bureaucracy, whether you're a FBI agent or the deputy director at the FBI, or for that matter, the deputy attorney general. You have no business. 25th Amendment is something that the vice president, members of the cabinet, maybe members of the Congress would get together on. Of course, the 25th Amendment, for those of you who may not remember, is an amendment that was created to remove the president in the event of a mental disability or physical disability. There is the case of Woodrow Wilson, President Wilson, who suffered a stroke in his last year as president and pretty much was in bed for much of the last year of his presidency. And he was not able to function as a president. This is where all the rumors began that his wife was running the country. Well, his wife was the person who took everything to him to sign, and every document that he signed in the last year of his presidency, we're not even sure if he knew what he was reading. I mean, apparently his wife was telling him what to sign. Now, the wife was very responsible, and, you know, he basically signed probably the same things that he would have signed had he not been disabled. But that's not a situation the country should ever go through. If you have a president who suffers a stroke or a president who has a mental incapacity or some kind of a physical problem, the 25th Amendment was created so that there would be an orderly transition to a new person who would then become president of the United States. It was never about replacing a president that you didn't like. That's not what it was about. Or somebody whose foreign policy you disagree with. That's what we have elections for. So what's going to happen with all of this? It appears that Mr. McCade and the Deputy Attorney General, who was also brought up, his name was also brought up in this conversation, it appears that the two of them are going to be subpoenaed by the U.S. Senate, by Senator Lindsey Graham. And I think we got to get to the bottom of this. Again, it does not appear that there was ever any, that they were ever close to invoking the 25th Amendment, because that would have required the vice president and a majority of the cabinet, and probably, I'm not sure, but I'm guessing the Senate as well as House leadership. In that case, that would have been Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. We never got there. We never got there. But the idea that they were even talking about it is something that should not be tolerated. So we'll see what happens at these hearings. But I think if, at the very least, there should be a message sent very clearly to future members of the Justice Department or the FBI. The 25th Amendment is not what you talk about. If you've got concerns about it, you go to the vice president, you go to the members of the cabinet, or maybe you go to the members of Congress, but you do not engage in these kinds of conversations. So we'll see what happens. But I actually think Mr. McCade has some problems of his own, and he may be setting something up. But the bottom line is that we should not have bureaucrats talking about the 25th Amendment. That's a very serious thing. The 25th Amendment, I thought, was one of the most thoughtful things that was done in the U.S. Constitution to create that mechanism to replace the president in case of a stroke or any kind of incapacitation. It had nothing to do with politics. And I just, I wish we wouldn't even be talking about it. These men were talking about it. That's just not what they should be doing. Had no business bringing this up. So we'll see what happens. I think this is a story that will probably go, be around for a few weeks, particularly if they go in front of the U.S. Of the U.S. Senate. Well, let's talk a little bit about President's Day. As I mentioned, every time we have one of these President's Days, I always spend a little bit of time thinking about who my favorite president was. And, of course, I tend to divide the presidents into three groups. The first one is what I call the historical giants, and that would be Washington and Lincoln. And they just happen to be president at such a unique moment in history that there's no way you can compare anybody to them. They're just, as I say, historical giants, Washington being the first one, and Lincoln, of course, during the Civil War. So those two stand out on their own. There's just no one can compare to, can be compared to those two. And then you have a bunch of other ones that you read about in school: Jefferson, Monroe, John Adams, McKinley, Garfield, and people like that, Woodrow Wilson, Coolidge, FDR, and Harry Truman. Those are the people you read about in school. And they all have very interesting stories, and some of them are very interesting to me, particularly Harry Truman, who I think became one of the great presidents of the 20th century, even though nobody thought he would. And then you have the third category, which is the presidents that you remember, the ones that you actually saw on TV, the ones that you actually followed, or the ones that you voted for. And in that case, then, of course, then you deal with them a little bit from a political standpoint. So when I look at the presidents that I remember personally, you got to go with Lyndon Johnson, who was president of the United States when we came here, when our family came to the United States in 64. And the great tragedy of Lyndon Johnson is Vietnam. He just mismanaged Vietnam so much and in many ways destroyed what could have been a good presidency. He could have been, I think, well-regarded on domestic matters. He did pass the Great Society and some of those other laws, but Vietnam will always be the big chapter one of his presidency. Then came Richard Nixon, who I regard as a very successful president, a great statesman, but, you know, Watergate basically was the bad chapter in the book and a big chapter in the book, and obviously it destroyed his presidency, although his ranking seems to be improving. If you look at some of these presidential rankings, he's going up. You know, it seems like he goes up a point or two every year. He will never be great because of Watergate, but I think he'll get much better coverage as time passes. And then you have Gerald Ford, the man who succeeded Nixon. Great man, decent man, but again, was not in there long enough, but will always be remembered as the man who I think in many ways restored the credibility of the presidency after Watergate. Then comes President Carter, who was a disaster in every way. Yeah, a nice man, a religious man, someone who I think would make a great friend. He would have made a great preacher, but the presidency was not for him. And I think even to this day, he's regarded as one of the great failures in the presidency. Ronald Reagan, probably the most successful two-term president of my life, and a man who was a great communicator and a man who inspired people to do great things, without question, the most successful president of my lifetime. Then came the first Bush, who was the last World War II veteran to serve in the presidency. And also, I think he had a very good presidency, a one-term presidency, to say the least, but I thought it was very effective. And as time passes, I think he will be regarded as maybe the most successful one-term president in recent memory. Then came Bill Clinton, who I think turned out to be a huge disappointment. Even though he had great political skills, he never really knew how to use them. He did get some things done with Congress. He obviously benefited from a great economy in his second term. But at the end of the day, when you look back at him, you keep thinking about his moral problems and not much else. George W. Bush, who I think will go down as one of our better presidents, if nothing else, because he had to deal with some very tough times, some very tough situations, whether it was 9/11, Iraq, and the war on terror. I think he set in motion many things that we continue today in the war on terror. So I think Bush, as time passes, as people get more objective in their coverage, will be regarded as a pretty good as a good president. President Obama, I thought, was a disappointment. And I've talked to many people who voted for him who feel that way. He never quite lived up to his potential. And he was a great communicator, could have inspired so many people with his great rhetoric, and yet he never did that. And, you know, we remember him now for Obamacare and not much else, because he used executive orders to do so many things, and most of those executive orders have been canceled by President Trump. So I think in just about every way, a major disappointment, President Obama. And then, of course, we come to Mr. Trump, who is a little bit too early to say how he will go down. I think he's done some great things. I think he's made some great contributions, particularly in the judiciary. But, you know, time will tell. Time will tell whether it all works out. But so far, it looks good, but also very controversial. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos. We'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guerrero Harpist. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos' website right there on the show information. Under the show description, you'll see a link to his website. Well, I have a post over at the American Thinker today. I'm going to recommend that you check it out. It's about Mexico and the problem with fuel theft going on in Mexico. I mean, it's a real problem. And according to Pemex, the state oil monopoly, it's costing the country about $3 billion a year. That's a lot of money. And a lot of people in Mexico are telling me that it's sort of an organized operation, meaning either cartels or maybe an inside job at Pemex. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy and so on in Mexico, as there always is. But so far, President López Obrador has not been blamed for this. But I think as time goes by, particularly if people come to the conclusion that it's an inside job, then I think López Obrador is going to have to fire some people. Now, some of my Mexican friends tell me that López Obrador is afraid of confronting the Pemex workers' union. But he may very well have to at some point, because you cannot have this kind of fuel theft going on in the country. It has a terrible impact on the distribution of fuel, and it's become quite a problem for the country. So we'll keep an eye on that story. It looks like the Amazon problem in New York is dividing the Democrats like we have not seen in a very long time, and it's cracking the party right down the middle. On one hand, you've got the extreme left that apparently was happy that Amazon didn't come to New York. 25,000 jobs just went up in smoke, and the people in the left are happy about that. And then you've got the people in the center left who, you know, they still have left-in ideas, but they understand what 25,000 jobs means. And there's a big battle going on in the Democrat Party right now. This is not going to get better. It's going to get worse before it gets better, because now you've got a lot of the voters who've got to be looking at the Democrat Party saying, how in the world do you allow 25,000 jobs to leave our city at a time when so much of New York desperately needs business and needs jobs? So keep an eye on that story. Keep an eye on that story, because that New York story, Democrats versus Amazon, is going to just continue growing and growing and growing. You know, the media always gets mad when President Trump talks about fake news, but then they keep giving President Trump material. I'm sure you heard about the actor who allegedly made up the attack by a couple of guys wearing, you know, Make America Great Again hats. And this is what's happening. The media keeps falling in the trap. Every time they see a story that is just too good to be true, they jump on it, and then they have to retract it. And I think they're hurting themselves, and they're giving President Trump a lot of material for President Trump to say fake news, fake news, fake news. Well, if you keep reporting fake news, don't get angry when people point it out to you. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Happy President's Day, and check out my story tomorrow about President's Day. I think you're going to enjoy it. Bye-bye, everybody. Silvio Canto in Dallas.